the dreadful Hamas terrorist attack on Israel two Saturdays ago. It came amid the backdrop of a long-standing history of conflict over land and independence. And it's plagued that region since almost time immemorial. The Balfour Declaration, issued by the British government in 1917, announced Britain's promise for a, quote, national home for the Jewish people in Palestine, which was then under the rule of the Ottoman Empire. The promise appeased the Zionist movement, who believed in a Jewish right to the land of Jerusalem, or Zion. There's another name for it. And following the end of World War I, the region of Palestine was conceded by the Ottoman Empire and was placed under the rule of the British. And that was under a mandate via the League of Nations. And what you see today is everything coming to a head. There has been conflict there. Remember the Six-Day War? We'll get to that in a second. But this seems to be the most serious. And when Hamas unleashed that dreadful terrorist attack two Saturdays ago, the world was in uproar, and I think most of the world was in deep, deep sympathy and support of Israel. But is that about to change? Is the world about to turn if they think that Israel's retaliation is disproportionate? If Israel goes over the top and kills a million and a half innocent Palestinians, all in the name of getting rid of Hamas, how will the world see that? It's a dreadful, dreadful story, but it's in our faces every day. So I thought, just to get some background on how we got to where we are today, with Israel amassing over 300,000 boots-on-the-ground troops ready to storm Gaza, let's talk to Keith Suter about how we got here. He's on the phone now. Keith, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Keith, yes, the question that most people are asking is, who is the traditional owner of Israel or Palestine or this piece of land that has been fought over for so many generations? Can you give us a simplistic, if it's possible, because it's very, but a history lesson on that part of the world?
Yes, well, it's impossible to say who is the traditional owner, because you've got competing histories. The Jews would say God promised them this promised land back in the time of Moses. If not even earlier. Whereas the Arabs, who came along, of course, later, would say, well, we've been around there much longer. The Jews were pushed out of that area in the year 70, and so they've been removed, and so we filled that vacuum. So for the last 2,000 years, the Arabs have been the major occupying force. And so you've got these competing histories. It's impossible to say which one is the traditional owner.
Wow, it's arguably one of the most difficult questions I've ever asked you.
It is, and it's impossible to answer. And so if you're pro-Israeli, you'd obviously say it's Jewish, but if you're not pro-Israeli, you'd say, well, it belongs to the Arabs. They've been there for 2,000-odd years. Well, they've actually only been around as Islam, of course, for a few centuries, 1,300 years. So you've got a choice. You know, who do you want to believe?
Can you outline Egypt's involvement in all of this?
Egypt is on the southern border of Gaza. Egypt at one point did control the Gaza Strip, so that, again, the history gets a bit confusing here. So all that area for centuries was controlled by Turkey, what would be called the Ottoman Empire. Mm-hmm. And then the Ottoman Empire broke up at the end of World War I. The Turks, of course, supported the Germans in World War I. And they lost, the Germans lost, the Turks lost. The Ottoman Empire got broken up. And you're left with a rump of territory, which is today's Turkey. And so part of the area which the Ottomans had to vacate was this area here in the Holy Land. Now, the problem was, during World War One, the British, who were conducting the major military operations there, made contradictory promises. So under Lawrence of Arabia, the British sought to get the Arabs involved and promised the Arabs, if you rebel against your Ottoman rulers, we will give you your own land. You'll be able to control your own land. On the other hand, in 1917, the British Foreign Secretary, Balfour, made a declaration promising Jews a homeland in that same area. So there were contradictory promises made by the British around the same time, and the object of the promise to the Jews was to somehow bring the Americans into World War One, which of course they did. So there you've got two conflicting promises being made by the same government, the British government.
And so after World War Two, obviously thousands...
Well, after World War One, what happened is that the British got control of this area.
Yes.
By the League of Nations. It was called a mandate territory. In the same way that Australia got control of German New Guinea, just to our north. So the British get control, and they don't give it to either. They hold on to it for themselves between 1918, at the end of the war, and 1948. And over those, particularly the period of the 20s and 30s, as Hitler came to power in Germany, particularly in 1933 onwards, so Jews fled Europe, and some of them tried to get to this land, which was still called Palestine. They were then acquiring land from Palestinians. They were buying it up. And then in the 1930s, you get this Arab resistance, this Palestinian resistance, saying we don't want to have any more Jews here. And the British government panics and decides, saying no more Jews allowed into Palestine. So they kept them out. And then also talked about having perhaps two separate territories, one for Jews,
yes,
one for the Arabs.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of what we call the two-state solution.
Yes.
So that was just before World War II. And then, of course, the war goes ahead in Second World War, 1939 to 1945.
And the Holocaust.
And the Holocaust, which meant there was a lot of international sympathy now for the Jews. It's worth bearing in mind in the 1930s that public perception was that the Arabs were these exotic, colourful individuals, thanks to Lawrence of Arabia,
yeah,
who were going to creep into your tent at night. You know, these were the Rudolf Valentinos. The Jews, by contrast, were just seen as Central European tailors.
Huh.
So that was the sort of the cultural perception of both groups. After World War II, the Jews were seen as the victims of the Holocaust, huge international sympathy. And the Arabs really just sort of slipped down. They were no longer seen as these exotic characters out of a World War One novel. And so that, you still get these continuing tensions. The British government, which has got so many problems, plus that it's broke because of World War Two, the British simply said to the UN, you take it over. And so it gets transferred to the UN. Which then revives the British offer, two states.
Yes.
And once again, the Israelis, through the what was called the Jewish Agency, said, yep, we'll accept that offer. We will accept some of the land. We'll agree that Palestinians get other bits of land. The Palestinians, for a second time, say, no, we're not going to share the land.
Yeah.
And thus we get the first of the wars between the new state of Israel plus the Arabs, and Egypt, of course, is drawn in as well. And they end up with the Gaza Strip being taken over by Egypt. So the Gaza Strip is at the southern end of Israel on the Egyptian border. The Egyptians were traveling up the coast road. They took over what is called Gaza today, but they couldn't get any further north. So the Egyptians got control of Gaza in 1948. And then there's another war between Israel and the Arab world in 1967. The Israelis did extremely well and took over much more land, including Gaza. and then held on to that from 1967 through until the early 1990s, mm-hmm. when the Norwegians again revived this two-state solution. And so that was what are called the Oslo Peace Accord, saw Gaza being transferred to a Palestinian authority to run away from Israel. So Israel was beginning once again to get back to the two-state solution. Israel has not been the problem on the two-state solution. Remember, it's always the Arabs who don't want to share any of the land. And so the Arabs got to set up their own government. So the process begins in 1993. It takes a while for the whole process to work its way through. And of course, it's now been stalled because of other developments. Then the first and last election so far, last election was held in 2006, which Hamas won. Now, just to confuse things further,
yes.
During this period, the tone of, once again, the cultural tone of the Palestinians changed. So at the end of World War II, 1948, both Israel and Palestinians were very secular. So the Israelis were not heavily influenced by the Jewish faith. They were modern-day socialists. And in the same way, really, the Palestinians had their own Palestinian Liberation Organization, or coalition of groups, most of whom were secular. So religion was never a major player in this process.
Right.
Whereas now, God has returned to the Middle East.
Mm.
And so we see hardline Jewish groups, conservative religious groups, who are growing rapidly. They are obviously influencing the tone of Israeli politics. And a similar process has happened in the Palestinian community, that we are now talking about Hamas as a Sunni organization rather than just as a Palestinian one, because religion has now become much more important.
Okay.
Rather than the Palestine Liberation Organization, which for many young people in Gaza is seen as made up of old people, mainly old men, who are just basically old-fashioned Marxists and socialists. With very little religious beginning. You've got a bit of a religious overlay there.
Yeah, sure. But, I was about to ask you, today, what's more important, real estate or religion?
Well, it's both now. Religion has made a comeback,
Yeah. Dr. Keith Suter is with us, expert on international affairs. It's an interesting question, isn't it? Who are the traditional owners of that piece of land? And you can't tell me. It's lost in history somewhere, Keith.
Yeah, absolutely.
Keith, when Hamas first invaded, and it was two Saturdays ago now, the world, of course, most of the world, was showing extreme sympathy towards Israel.
Hmm.
I'm worried. I'm just looking at the news that I watch, the feeds that I have access to. I see lots of pro-Palestinian protests now going ahead around the world. Do you think that the sympathy has turned? And the more Israel retaliates, and the might of Israel's retaliation will be Old Testament, do you think people are concerned about, once again, innocent people being killed?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is the risk that the Israelis run. I think it's one of the reasons why the foreshadowed invasion has been delayed, because the Israeli military realize they're walking into an urban guerrilla struggle. And it's extremely difficult to win that sort of struggle, and certainly a struggle which will entail a huge loss of life. And so the immense public sympathy which Israel enjoyed a couple of weeks ago will begin to evaporate as we get to see all those youngsters perishing. You know, people being told in hospitals, you're either going to look after your patients and stay and get killed, or you leave and leave your patients there to die.
What's the answer, Keith?
There is no answer.
Where do you think it's heading?
Well, it's going to head for a major conflict. It may involve the Iranians. The Iranians are not automatic allies of Hamas, right? So we're back to religion. The Iranians are Shia, and so Hamas are Sunni. So there's no love lost between those two religious communities. And I think one of the signs of that is the fact that the uprising took place last 2 weekends ago, and Hezbollah was caught by surprise, as the rest of us were. So Hezbollah are the Shia group backed by Iran, and they're to the northern end of Israel. So they're in Lebanon and Syria. And they, the obvious thing would have been to have had that group rebel at the same time as Hamas. But Hamas didn't keep them informed. So Hezbollah, although nominally anti-Israel, and also reject Israel's right to exist. This is another basic problem, by the way, that Hamas is quite clear that it does not think that Israel has a right to exist. So that's why it won't accept a two-state solution.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. All right, Keith, it's incredibly sad, isn't it?
It is.
It's incredibly
sad. Very
sad.
We're going to see a lot more people killed, I'm afraid.
All right. Keith, thank you so much. I've taken up way too much of your time this morning. You're always very generous, but today you've excelled yourself. But thank you. We needed that. It puts it in perspective. But, yes, incredibly, incredibly sad. All right. Dr. Keith Suter, expert on international affairs and the man behind the Global Truths podcast.